Hello everyone, my name is Bert Janssen. I'm a service engineer in the SharePoint and OneDrive service engineering team. In this module, I'm going to explain you managing site settings using the add-in model. So from a agenda perspective, we're going to discuss how to modify pages, how to put content on pages, how to remove content from pages, how JavaScript embedding can be a very powerful technique to further customize your pages in SharePoint. And finally, we'll talk about how you do the typical site settings manipulations using CSOM. This slide shows the Office developer vision. At the left side, we have Office running on different devices. Nowadays, we have Office on smartphones, on tablet, on PC, on laptop, all kind of devices, actually Office everywhere. At the right side, we have the data that we have in Office 365. So we have mail, we have documents, we have people, tasks, and so on. Now, when you build an Office add-in, you will be able to use this Office add-in in all the flavors of Office appearing on all the different devices that we have. So the same add-in, you will be able to use the same add-in on a smartphone, on your tablet, and on your PC, which gives you the possibility to create powerful apps that run on, for example, on a tablet connecting to mail. You have websites running on a server that connect to SharePoint data and people data. You have your JavaScript running in a browser connecting to tasks. You name it, everything is possible today. So which recommendations would we like to highlight before we dive into the details? When we talk about JavaScript embedding, please do use it with some care. The main reason is that the JavaScript embedding relies on HTML IDs to find elements to customize. These elements are not guaranteed to be static, although most of them are very static and have never changed in the last years. But we'll always be cautious of that. When we load assets like JavaScript or CSS, always think about how to dynamically load them. Meaning, if they're loaded once, they're cached by the browser. Think about a strategy to ensure that you can refresh the cache. And we'll discuss more about potential solutions later on in this module. Important also is to follow up on CSOM updates. The CSOM API is continuously evolving and more features are being added over time. So what's not possible today might be possible tomorrow, so please follow up on that one. And finally, important note around performance. It's important that you, when you write code, that you keep performance in the back of your head. Apply proper caching techniques to ensure that the response times of your applications are well. And there's also a little demo coming up later on that shows you how you can, for example, use HTML5 like local storage to do caching. Introduction. So we're going from the feature framework to the app model. What does it actually mean? Feature framework is the classical way to provision content and solutions to SharePoint. So you would, for example, define content type and site columns in feature XML. Wrap it in a feature, create a solution and deploy that. Or you would create a feature that has a module in there and the module deploys, for example, the JavaScript file to a library in the site. That's the old way. In the new approach, everything is done using app model techniques and using client-side APIs. So we're not using the feature framework anymore in this new world. So what do we then use to do our site management? Mainly remote APIs. So as mentioned, we have CSOM APIs and REST APIs, which are becoming more and more powerful each month. More and more capabilities are being added. And most of the settings that you would need to customize, need to do, are possible from CSOM and REST. When do you typically do this site management, this site customization? For example, when do you add a content type, or when do you provision that particular file? We see two main approaches here. One is at site provisioning time. So when the site collection or subsite is provisioned, at that point you take over and you do the necessary changes, apply that particular branding to the site collection, upload a JavaScript file, create the content types, all of that can be done at that point. Or an alternative pattern that we often see is on an app installed remote event receiver. So when you install an app and the app needs a particular content type or needs a particular file to be present, then you can use the CSAM APIs in the app installed event handler to make that happen. Now sometimes the APIs that we have are not sufficient, and since I want to have code that's running fully client side that can be deployed to SharePoint online and on premises, you do want to use a different approach. In the old style, in the old world, you could, for example, deploy custom controls to the server that would then add additional capabilities, which doesn't work anymore in the SharePoint online world. So for that, JavaScript embedding is a very popular and powerful pattern. What it does is it embeds a JavaScript, or actually a call to a JavaScript file into your site, so that when a page from your site is loaded, your specific JavaScript file or piece of JavaScript code is also executed. And using the JavaScript file, you can then start manipulating the HTML structure of the page. You can add elements or remove elements. Good. Now, first, let's talk about page and content modification, because when you create a site, pages, the content on the page is important. Most times when you provision a site, you want to update the home page to put your content on there. You want to maybe create additional pages, and that's covered in this section. So when we talk about pages here, we're talking about wiki pages. There are also publishing pages and publishing sites, but that's slightly different. Now for wiki pages, when we modify wiki pages, what do we typically do? We want to add content on them, like HTML, but also content like, for example, a web part or even an app part. Now, why do we want to do that? Because, as mentioned, like you create your own project site, Contoso project site, and on Contoso project site, you want to have a particular web part on the home page. So that's your design. Now, how to realize that is at provisioning time, just modify the home page and apply this, add this particular web part on there, or create a new page and make that new page the default page of the site. These are all options that you can take. How would we do this? That's using CSAM, potentially also using JavaScript embedding if CSAM is not sufficient. And then the CSAM is called from during provisioning time. So when you provision the site, at that point, after the site collection has been created, you add your code that does all of this. Or you have indeed, you can also have an app that you installed it, and it triggers remote an app installed remote event receiver to handle this. This slide shows you a schema of how this would work. So in point one, we install an app, and there's an app installed event receiver that kicks off. That calls back into our provider hosted app here at the right side. This provider hosted app then uses CSAM or REST to go back to the SharePoint host web to manipulate the pages. So to add a page with particular content on it, for example. Today I'm gonna give you a demo about our provisioning.pages PnP sample. This sample shows you how you can manipulate pages. So pages are the common elements in SharePoint that your users interact with, and typical actions on a page are adding content to it, like HTML fragments, or for example, adding or removing web parts. All of that will be shown in this little demo. With that said, let's switch to the actual solution. The solution that I'm going to show you today is a provider-hosted SharePoint application. So it typically these solutions, they have a SharePoint part, so the SharePoint app over here, and there is the provider part, so the actual website running the solution. Before we dive into the code, I'm simply gonna execute the demo and show you what the output is. After that, we show you how the actual steps in the demo were performed. The environment is set up correctly, so I've provided my URL to my developer site, so that's all good. With that being said, I can simply press F5 and Visual Studio should deploy my application and launch the browser so I can log on. Alright, let's log on, sign in. Working on it, going well. All right. So I already launched this application before this demo, so I did not get a consent dialog. If you run this for the first time, SharePoint will ask you like, do you trust that this app has the permissions that it requires? So we need to press yes in order to continue, of course. In this this application, it's really a demo application showing you two different scenarios. The first scenario is a very basic one where we add some HTML to a wiki page. So let's try that. So here we have the HTML. So it mentions hello 365 developer PNP. I'm gonna say we're doing great. Now, and let's click on the run scenario button. What this will do is it will create a temporary page in the site, in the host web here, and we'll add the HTML on that page. Once you've clicked on the run button scenario, you can use the click here to go to the actual created page. So let's do that. And voila. Here we have our little HTML snippet added to this page with a weird looking name, but just because we generated that page like that. So very simple, but very powerful. Let's switch back to our demo application. The second scenario is slightly more advanced because it deals with wiki page manipulation. It allows you to create a wiki page using a particular chosen layout. So by default, SharePoint allows you to create wiki pages using these layouts. Now a wiki page layout is nothing more than a piece of HTML. So you could even design your own layout with different configurations. But in reality, with these configurations, you can already get pretty far. Now for this demo, let's take, what shall we take? Let's take a two column with header and footer. And like in scenario one, I'm gonna click the run scenario two button, which does all the magic. It creates a wiki page using that particular chosen layout. And in this case, it does something special. It obviously also adds HTML like before, but we're also adding a new web part to this page. So we have a promoted list in the site, and we're going to add the promoted list web part on our created page. Let's have a look if that succeeded. So let's jump to this page. And we see here our at the left side our promoted links web part. The right side we see our HTML snippet. And just to show you guys that we also actually have the proper correct layout. So we chose a header, two column, footer model. And you see here that we have the header, the two columns and the footer, which is what we wanted. Perfect. Let's save this page. Let's switch back to the demo. A third part of the demo is actually removing the web part that we added to the page. So we'll hit this button and it will then, if everything went well, refresh this page. You see that this little promoted links web part is gone again. Now, that concludes the functional overview of the demo. If you try this on your own, you can clean up the temporary pages that were created using this button, so they're removed from your host web, and you can close the browser. Good, good. Now let's have a quick look at the code. So this is, as said, a provider-hosted application. So we have a website. In this case, it's a plain, simple ASP.NET website with a default.aspx over here, which contains all the logic for the demo. The actual page manipulation logic, that one is in the PNP core library. So the PNP core library is a set of reusable extension methods that you can use to enrich your projects. And in this scenario, we've used PNP core since it contains methods to add wiki pages and to add web parts on pages. Let's open up default ASPX and let's scroll to some interesting parts. For scenario one, you see how simple it is. We create a page. We add a piece of HTML and this text box value to that page, and that's it. It's actually a few lines of code to realize that scenario. Scenario two is slightly more complex, as mentioned. What we do here is let's zoom. We're going to add the promoted links list if it's not there and add some items. Then in the second step, we're going to create a page and we showed that nice little drop down where you could select a page template for wiki page template. So that's built in here. So we chose two columns, headers, footer. So it's actually the add layouts to wiki page extension method from PNP that we use. And we specify, okay, I want to have this particular template. Very simple, one line to create a wiki page with a proper template. And then once we have the page created, it's about adding content. I already showed you how to add HTML to the wiki page in the previous scenario. In this scenario, the extra thing is adding a web part to a page. And for that, there again is extension method, add webpart to wiki page, which takes your webpart XML, which your page over here, the row and the column. So in this case, we had a header, two columns, footer. So we have three rows. So we take the row number one. In this case, we have header. So this row is two. So the second row, the first column, and then we put the web part. The web part XML itself is created in this VP promoted links method, which is slightly lower here. You see here, I'm going to show you a little preview of that. So this is the method that creates the web part XML, which is just the same old web part XML that you used to work with in the past. So, conclusion, using the PNP core library, it becomes very simple to deal with pages. Adding web parts, removing web parts from pages, adding HTML to pages, creating pages, it all is very seamless and easy to do. In this next section, we're going to talk about JavaScript embedding. JavaScript embedding is a very powerful technique to execute your JavaScript files, your JavaScript code from each and every page in your site collection or web. So what is it? Is a mechanism and a pattern which allows you to use a custom action. So SharePoint has a user custom action collection at site level and web level, and we add an element in there in a custom user action, and that custom user action will have either embedded JavaScript or will I reference a JavaScript file located somewhere on a central location like a SharePoint site or a CDN. So the reason why we want to use this technique is to complement the existing CSAM APIs. For example, if you would want to prevent your users from creating subsites, you could simply hide the create subsite link using JavaScript. It's finding the proper element and hiding that the div showing the create new site link. It's a very simple example, but it shows the potential of this technique. Now, how would you then apply this custom user action? Typically, this is done at provisioning time, so when your end user requests a site. At that point, we use custom code to create a site collection and then to customize to create a site collection. And one of the customization steps can be, in this case, adding that user custom action in there that calls the JavaScript file. So how would that work? We have SharePoint at the left side and a provider-hosted app at the right side. So in this case, we associate JavaScript using a user custom action to the SharePoint site, which then ensures that when a page is loaded from the SharePoint site, the JavaScript file is loaded and executed, and thus it's magic. In this case, on the slide here, we're showing this yellow banner with an additional warning message. So one of the examples that you can do with JavaScript. The JavaScript that is responsible for showing this banner is then located preferably in a central location, like a central SharePoint site or a content delivery network, a place where you can easily manage and update these files. Now you might ask yourself, like, will this be a problem? Because, for example, removing the create subsite link, it depends on the ID of the div holding that part of the HTML. So if somehow Microsoft changes that ID, your code will break. And that's definitely true. So the code will break in those cases. Now, reality of life is that these things are rather stable. Another concern in this model is about how to ensure that the latest JavaScript file is loaded, because browsers cache JavaScript files, like they cache images and CSS. And a possible model here is working with a proxy.js. So the proxy.js is a JavaScript file which is responsible for loading the other files. And to load the other files, it can apply some logic. It can, for example, check in the web property bag or site property bag which version is needed, and based on that, load the correct file. So we dynamically can load, for example, the logic version 1 initially, and then if the site is upgraded, and we put a new property in the site property bag to tell the proxy script to, okay, now as of now you have to load version 2. At that point version 2 is loaded, and later on version 3, and so on. Proxy.js can do that just by simply appending a ref equal v1, v2, v3 to the JavaScript file when it loads it, which makes triggers the browser in downloading the proper version again. Another alternative approach is hosting these JavaScript files on a CDN, where then the CDN will ensure that you always get the latest version. Today I'm going to give you a demo about the JavaScript embedding. Being able to embed or to launch a JavaScript from your site pages is crucial because using JavaScript, you can, for example, inject or embed additional navigation elements. You can update the UI, meaning removing links from the UI, for example. So it is a crucial technology used in our modern SharePoint app development. With that said, let's move to the Visual Studio solution. The solution itself is named core.embed JavaScript, and you can find that in the samples folder of PNP. It's a typical provider-hosted SharePoint application. So there is the SharePoint part over here, and there is the provider-hosted part over here. Before you run the solution, you have to set up the SharePoint part to point to to your developer site, which I already did up front. So when I now press F5, Visual Studio will automatically deploy the application and launch the browser for me. So I'm gonna log on. Here we go. And here's the application. So if you run this for the first time, keep in mind that SharePoint will prompt you for an application consent. So you need to grant an application the rights to it request. So in this case, this application will need to have rights to control the web. But I already ran this upfront, so that's not showing here in this demo. This application, this little sample, is meant to teach you something. So it's purely focused on embedding of JavaScript. So if you look at the UI, you clearly see that this is a provider host application. So my host is localhost here, over here. And what the application will do is actually embedding a JavaScript file in the host web. So when we click this embed customization button, we will connect a JavaScript file to the host web, which will then will be executed each time a page of the host web is being loaded. Let's first show what the outcome is of this action, and then let's talk about the code. So I'm gonna click on this embed customization button, and nothing seems to happen, but in reality, the JavaScript was connected to the host web. So I'm gonna right click and open up the host web in a new tab. And what you see over here is, first of all, this should be immediately kind of taking your attention, because this is a custom element. This was added now using the JavaScript embedding. So on all pages, if I go to apps and testing, I would see the same banner popping up. Here it is. So that's done using this JavaScript file, and as I said, I'll show you how this is done in JavaScript later on. A second thing, besides adding information to a site, is removing information. So in this scenario, in this de little demo, we've opted to hide the create subsite link. So if I scroll down here, and you see lots of testing has been done on the site, but here is the typical subsites element in the site contents page. And in reality, you would have here the add subsite link. But now it's gone due to this JavaScript customization. Right, now we can also undo this as easy as we can embed the JavaScript. It's as easy to remove it again. So let's click on remove customization here. And at this point, this JavaScript customization should be removed. We can verify that if we do a refresh of this site contents page. At that point, the yellow banner should be gone. It is. And a final check will be like, is this new subsite link over there? And yep, here we have this guy is back. Okay, enough about the actual demo. Let's flip to the code, to Visual Studio. So I'm going to close this. Here we are again in Visual Studio. As this is a provider-hosted app using ASP.NET technology, so there's a default page, which I'm going to open here, default ASPX. And in this page, we have a submit button to add, to embed a JavaScript and remove, to take it away again. So this is calling add JS link, which is where all the interesting stuff is happening. So what we'll do in add JS link is build up a URL to a JavaScript file, which is hosted on our provider. So the website hosting this application is also hosting the JavaScript file. We build up some JavaScript, which then embeds the calling your custom JavaScript file into the page. So we actually are appending a script tag to all pages, and that script tag is then launching your JavaScript file. How do we do that? That's done using custom actions. So SharePoint has a model of where you can add custom actions, user custom actions here, to the web, or alternatively also to the site. So web scoped custom actions are called within the scope of the web. If you add something to the site user custom actions, that's called for each and every page and each and every subsite. So if you, for example, are adding a navigation or the thing that I showed you, like removing the create subsites link, some things make sense to have available on all pages across all subsites in the site collection, then you use the site. Once you have done this, your custom action will automatically fire on each and every page in your site. So we explained how to add user custom action to the web to load your JavaScript file, but we didn't really talk about the JavaScript file itself that we used for this demo. So that one is called scenario1.js, and it's a pretty simple one, but there are some things that you need to take in consideration. First of all, there is a section in the beginning of the JavaScript file that explains you how to make it MDS compliant. MDS stands for Minimal Download Strategy, and it's a concept in SharePoint team sites that prevents SharePoint from reloading full pages each time again. So if your JavaScript customization is not MDS compliant, SharePoint doesn't know when to load it, and as such it will not load on all pages, resulting in a broken functionality. So that's important. Next is actually loading your script. So in this case, we're actually first loading jQuery. Once that's done, we're gonna do our work. So this HTML fragment here is the message that we're showing. And then we're using this setStatusBar function to do the actual message setting. This is using a native SharePoint JavaScript functions called hStatus and the setStatus pry color, which are in the sp.us status namespace. So pretty straightforward. And the final part is actually removing that create site link, which is done over here. So we check, like, okay, are we on this particular page, the view all site contents page in this case, find the element with this ID, and then hide it. Nothing more, nothing less. So with some simple lines of JavaScript, you can do a lot of things in SharePoint. Let's move on with a setting that shows you how you can control site settings using a CSOM. What is it? When you provision a site, you do often want to already customize the site settings for that particular site. For example, if you're in a multilingual context, like many European countries are, when you create a team site, you might want to automatically configure language settings so that this team site can be shown, for example, in English, in Dutch, and in Finnish. Although that would be a strange combination, but nevertheless. Other common things, regional settings or auditing. So you might want to put your sites under auditing as of the beginning. Why would you want to automate this? Just to make it easier for your end users and to avoid potential problems. And the how? It's typically done from site provisioning. So after the site collection has been created, your provisioning code then applies these type of site settings. Alternatively, this can also be done using an app installed remote event receiver. When you install the app will then configure the site accordingly. Both scenarios work, but the most common one is from site provisioning. What are typical site settings that we change in this approach? Of course, feature management, activating the needed features, deactivating the ones that we don't need. Permission management, adding users, adding groups, giving them permissions, blocking SharePoint Designer, adding a custom logo or even a custom theme can be set. We already talked about auditing and regional settings and language settings. So these are rather new CSOM extensions that were added from premises in the December CU 2014. And for online, they were added in the recent NuGet package for the online redistribution. So this also raises the point like, okay, these APIs seem to be evolving. Do we get more site-level APIs for CSOM and REST? And the answer there is, yeah, it depends a bit. But you can also help raise your voice. So we have the Office Dev User Voice site where you can let us know what you miss. If you miss a particular API, describe it and have other people vote on it. And the higher an API gets ranked, the higher the likelihood is that we will implement this API. Moving on, talking about performance optimization. Performance is for each and every application an important aspect, so this also applies for your SharePoint applications. And here specifically we want to talk about caching and asset optimization. So when you use client-side techniques like JavaScript running on the client side, making calls to SharePoint, or even a CSOM code running on a provider somewhere, making a call to SharePoint, it's always important to think about how do I avoid going back to SharePoint server? How can I cache my data? An example, if you on the homepage of your internet put client-side object model code that reads the user profile of the logged on user, and then based on that it will show some data. It doesn't make any sense to each time again go back to the user profile service and load the data. So on each page load, you will hitting the user profile service is a bad thing to do. It would be better to hit it once, cache the data, and then give the cached data an expiration, like a few days, and then after those few days, we do a second call. This way is way more performing for the user because the data can be fetched from local store and it will be less taxing on SharePoint, so the overall performance will be better. Now, how do we do this? Typical approaches for client-side caching are either using cookies, which is the old and proven technology. And nowadays, we also have HTML5 local storage, which of course requires your browser to support HTML5, but that shouldn't be any problem these days anymore. When we are working with the client-side components, with the functionality running in the browser in client-side, like JavaScript, it's important that the assets that we need and that are used, like the JavaScript, but also elements like images or CSS, that you think about the strategy how to manage them. If you provision sites, you can obviously deploy the needed JavaScript and CSS and images to each and every site collection and reference it from there. It's one approach. But if the JavaScript changes, you need to run over all the site collections and update the JavaScript everywhere. An alternative mean is storing these files in a central site collection in SharePoint, kind of a hub where you collect all these assets, and then you refer to that one. Or a second model would be if you have a provider-hosted application that you use here, You can also keep these JavaScript and PNG images and CSS files as part of the provider hosted application. So on the web server hosting your provider hosted application. The question is, can I use content delivery networks for asset storage? Absolutely yes. I think content delivery networks are designed to provide to give you high performance and a cache-safe way to retrieve those files, so they can be geographically distributed. An ideal platform to store JavaScript, CSS, and images. Now keep in mind that certain assets, like for example a master page or a page layout, they cannot be stored in content delivery networks. So they still have to be stored inside a SharePoint environment. Actually, in each and every site collection in this case. In this demo, I'm going to explain you how you can use JavaScript-based caching techniques to improve performance of your SharePoint applications. The demo that I'm going to show you is available in PNP under samples and is called performance.caching. It's showing two approaches using a HTML5 local storage for caching data or using cookies. So cookies is the, let's call it, more older approach, which works also in older browsers, but nowadays most browsers support HTML5 and as such also HTML5 local storage. So for the actual demo explanation, I'm gonna focus on the HTML5 storage model. This demo consists out of two SharePoint hosted applications, one using cookies, one using local storage. So, but as said, today focus will be on the local storage sample. Let's first run the sample and see what it does, and then let's talk a bit about the code. Like all SharePoint applications, you need to first set up your site URL and get to an online status in the server connection, and then you can press F5. So I'm pressing F5. The Visual Studio is deploying my application and launching my SharePoint site. I need to sign in. Sign in. The page is loading. And I'm ending up on my demo page of my application. So what this application will do, it will read data from about me from your user profile, and will then cache it and show you different options how to deal with cache. Reading from the user profile, for example, is a pretty resource-intensive operation. So you shouldn't build an intranet that is hit by 20,000 people, and each time again it will go and fetch the profile information. That would be a very bad design from a performance point of view. So a better way there is to okay, first time you read the profile data, you cache it, give it a certain expiration window. Profile data is rather static, so you could give it a expiration window of, let's say, 3 days. So which means that for those 20,000 users, they only go back to the user profile service once each 3 days, which is a huge difference, but compared to once on each page load. And that's why we need these caching techniques. So in this case, my user profile information is this hello class. The about me is returned over here. And you see here at the bottom that it already retrieved this information from local storage. So it was already in the cache because I ran this demo before. Now what I'm going to do now is just add some updates and update the local cache, cached data from the About Me user profile property. So I'm going to say PNP is great, and that's really true. So I'm going to save. At this point, it updated the local storage. So if I now do a page reload, I should still see my PNP is great message, and it does. You also see here in the status message that information is fetched, retrieved profile from local storage and not from the user profile service. Now, if I clear the ca click on the clear the cache button, what will happen is that this local storage is dropped, is cleared, and the code will go back to the user profile service and fetch the data living on the server, which should be a different value than the one showing right now. So let's try that, clear the cache. And you see that this one changed, the PNP is great message is gone. And you see, if I scroll a little bit down, that the information now is being read from the user profile. So we took a fresh copy and updated the cache again. The demo also shows you how to deal with the expiration. So you can add your an expiration time window to your local cache so that it would automatically expire after a certain amount of seconds. Good. So this is what the application does, what the demo does. Let's have a quick look at the code. I'm gonna close the browser window, jump into the code. I'm opening up the local storage SharePoint hosted application. And since this is a SharePoint hosted application, there is no C Sharp, only JavaScript and HTML. And the interesting file here is this app.js that contains all the logic. And but so here you see in the JavaScript code, you see the call to a local storage get item. So we fetch the about me value from the local store. If it's not there, so the first time run or the cache expired or you programmatically cleared the cache, we will call this get user properties function using the SharePoint function execute or delay until script loaded. So this one, if you jump into this get user properties function, it's a bit down here, it will get the context and then it will call the user profile people manager to get your properties and it takes out the property that it needs, which is done here in this part of the code. So we read from the SharePoint user profile and get a property, which then is, if I scroll back up, which is then stored in cache. However, if there was cache data found, we simply take the data from cache and we check on the expiration over here. Like this. So all in all, I think it's important that you think about caching in your applications, especially for applications that are used by many users. Typical scenarios here are intranets. We've seen intranets being hit by thousands and thousands of users. So without a proper caching strategy in place, the response times for users will be inadequate. So please, please, please think about caching for those. To conclude Module 2 of the FC to App Transformation Training, I would like to do a short recap on our recommendations. First of all, we've seen the JavaScript embedding technology and we've seen how powerful it is, but I would recommend to be careful here. JavaScript embedding depends on the IDs of HTML elements. If these IDs change, which is unlikely, but it can happen, then your code will break, so be aware. Secondly, when we load dynamic assets like JavaScript or CSS, the browser will cache those assets. So think about how you can ensure that when you refresh those assets, that they are refreshed at the client side. And also think about having a central location to store all of your assets, to avoid having to update them in each and every site collection in your organization. Thirdly, we've seen that the CSAM API has become more and more powerful. Each month, new capabilities are added. So please follow up on the evolution of CSAM. And if you miss something, let us know. We have user voice where you can raise your concerns. Finally, but definitely very important, is client-side optimization. Think about performance, think about caching. When your code runs in the browser, client-side using JavaScript, you cannot simply afford to go back and forth to the server each time. So Avoid chattiness in your applications by caching data locally in the browser, either using cookies or using HTML5 storage. Since this is a recorded video, you don't have an opportunity to ask questions, but I would like to point out Office Dev PnP. All the samples that you've seen in this video are coming from the PnP, and we have actually more than 100 plus samples already in available for you, covering common scenarios such as branding, site provisioning, UX, and so on. We have custom components, custom people picker, taxonomy picker, a lot of valuable stuff for you that you can leverage. Next thing, that there's also a very active Yammer group, which you can reach going to ak.ms/officedevpnpyammer. This community has over 2,600 members and is one of the most active communities in the Office 365 external network. So if you have technical questions around SharePoint development, please join the community, ask a question, and work with the peers in that great group over there. Dev.office.com is our overall landing page for Office development. If you're new to Office development or want to explore samples, please go to dev.office.com and start learning. It's a great resource for you. Lots of valuable IP in there. And finally, an important aspect of all of this is feedback. Let us know what you think. If we don't know what you think, we can't improve. So the more feedback we get, the better we can help you. As already mentioned, we have the Yammer network. You can reach it via www.jammer.com/ITProNetwork. Don't be fooled by the name IT Pro Network. It's actually an Office 365 Yammer network covering both IT Pro and developer. We have User Voice. User Voice is a platform where you can put your requests in, your feature requests, and have other people vote on it. And that input is highly valued by the engineering teams because they look at that input and based on that they prioritize their work. And finally, there's Stack Overflow, where you can ask more technical questions and work with a community of technical experts to help you getting your answers to your questions.